John Shannon joining us on the phone line. This could be a pretty special 24 hours for the Avs, John, couldn't it?
Well, yeah, Joe Sakic could end up double-dipping here and having a good time when you think about potentially being the number one pick at the draft lottery and then flying to Calgary to take on the Flames. It might be fun for Joe.
I feel like this organization is just right on the cusp of a real good era here. You know, they've got Kale McCarr, excuse me, that from UMass that I would expect will be around these parts at some point. I don't know if he'll play or not, but it seems like as soon as his season's done, he'll join the group, I'd expect. They've also got a bunch of good young prospects, their own first rounder, and now a really high pick. We looked at that deal before it happened. It was like, Joe Sakic's waited too long. He's not going to get any value. Why didn't they move Duchesne sooner? That might be one of the trades in the of franchise history, right up there with, what, the Lindros deal that set them up for a good half decade or decade.
And don't discount the original trade where, in the end, with the way Kyle Turris has played in Nashville and then the fact that Matt Duchesne is not in Ottawa anymore, that is Samuel Girard the best value in the trade period from a player's perspective? All you have to do is watch what he's going to do in this series against the Flames. It's he must be a pretty good poker player because he waited and waited and waited and didn't fold at the appropriate time and got exactly what he wanted.
Okay. Other storylines surrounding the draft lottery tonight. There's some familiar faces that probably would love to not be there. I never bet against the Oilers in these things, John. That's the one thing I've learned.
Now, I'm not sure that that's truthful or just bitter or it's sarcastic. I mean, you take your pick at any particular moment about somebody from Calgary suggesting that I wouldn't trust anything that the Oilers do at the draft lottery, as if the Oilers have some sort of say in the draft lottery.
You know what? We just can't help ourselves, and sarcastic's probably the right way to go.
I know.
Okay. The draft lottery, by the way, 6 o'clock tonight on Sportsnet, and Matty Rose will have updates as he gets you set for Game 3 between the Hitmen and the Oil Kings. John, Slavovoynov was handed down a suspension today as he's trying to get back to the NHL. He'll miss all of next season, including being ineligible for the playoffs. Is there any GM of the 31 out there that is bold / dumb enough to ink this guy?
Well, don't forget, he's still Kings property. He still is a member of the Los Angeles Kings, even though he's on the voluntary retirement list. So I guess, in essence, we have to figure out what the Kings want to do with him. And if they want to distance themselves, or are they hoping that by the time October of 2020 comes, that people will have forgotten? I suggest that they will not have forgotten. So it becomes a very interesting dilemma for the Kings and then for the other 30 teams at that point, what they do with Slavovoynov. The other thing is, guys, you know, the Players Association still have not weighed in at this point, as I understand. I've been sequestered a little bit here, worried about the draft lottery, but about whether they even would consider appealing such a suspension. I would think that it would not be in the public interest and their public persona to appeal, but stranger things have happened.
John Shannon's with us from Sportsnet. John, it's Pat, and is there not something that could be gained from the NHL just saying outright, we're not going to let you back? Like, I get it, they did for another year, but could they not send a fairly important precedent and just saying, you know what, we're just going to ban you from playing in the NHL, period?
It certainly would not have been a wrong decision from a public perspective. From a legal perspective, and remember, Pat, these leagues are not run by you and me anymore. They're run by lawyers.
Absolutely.
From a legal perspective, would they have been allowed to do that? You know, that becomes the key question, and it's probably a question that at some point, you know, Mr. Bettman or Mr. Daly is going to have to answer, perhaps in the next year or so.
Do you get the sense that Mr. Bettman would love to see no one have any interest in him? Because I feel like it's a PR nightmare, no matter the market. a significant percentage of people that spend a lot of money on the NHL product are females, and you're running a massive campaign called Hockey is for Everyone. I don't know that that coexists well with that guy playing in this league.
Yeah, 44% of all hockey fans are women. By the last statistics that I've seen, and I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. This is one of those. This can be and could be perceived as some level of a PR nightmare if it doesn't work out. But I think you guys have both hit the nail on the head. I will be shocked if any team elects to make him part of their roster. That to me is really the key. And perhaps Bettman is saying to the teams, okay, you make the decision on what you want to do. We've passed judgment. I mean, he's been out of the National Hockey League for 6 years. It's not as if he's been out just for a year. He's been out for 6 years, and for people, some people say, is that enough? Some people are saying it's not enough. And obviously, from a collective bargaining agreement position, the league feels that it 7 years is enough for Voyanov to have suffered.
John, I'll switch gears on you here a little bit. And, you know, we talked a little bit and we joked a little bit about the Oilers and the draft lottery. But as they get set for the draft lottery, they've now missed the playoffs in 12 of the last 13 years. And it sure does seem like in Edmonton this summer is crucial for them. They've got a head coaching hire, and before that they've got a general manager hire. Just from who you've talked to league-wide and in the Oilers organization, have you got the sense that there has been a philosophical shift in Edmonton as they get set for this very important summer?
Philosophical shift, I'm not sure is the right phrase, but what I can tell you is they know the importance internally as well as externally. They know how vital it is to right the ship in Edmonton. I'm sure that this has given Bob Nicholson some sleepless nights of how to manage through this, how to change perception in the marketplace. And when I say change perception, trying to rid itself of the old boys club perception, and I truly believe it is a perception, it's not a reality. But I think that that's why it's probably taken, I think for some people, probably think longer than it should have, but they're waiting for the right guy and the right point to do so many different things. So from that perspective, that's why Nicholson's taking his time, and I think he and the owner Daryl Cates and the organization understand the importance of the next move.
So it's funny, where does or how does Bob Nicholson fit in the Oilers organization hierarchy-wise? What does he touch? What are his responsibilities? And how does he kind of frame what comes next in that city?
I think it's probably easier to probably ask what he doesn't touch, Pat. Right now, he's the conduit to ownership. Right now, he's in charge of the building. Right now, he's in charge of hockey operations. There isn't anything today that doesn't go across Nicholson's desk. From Bakersfield to the East Coast League to the Oil Kings to the Oilers to Rogers Place, everything goes across Nicholson's desk. And that's a daunting task alone, let alone having to find a way to improve the situation as everybody in Edmonton knows it needs to be improved.
So just want to circle back to your thought, the perception of the old boys club. You think that's more myth than reality. Do you see cultural issues there? Do you not see a lot of voices around the organization that perhaps could be considered interference or at least distracting from a singular, you know, front from a GM's position?
Well, I do think it's more perception than reality. I think that, you know, both Peter Chiarelli and Todd McLellan, you know, they singularly made decisions. Peter Chiarelli didn't have to go and ask Wayne Gretzky or Kevin Lowe or Paul Coffey what to do. He might have been able to, but he probably chose not to most of the time. The only person in the last 18 or 24 months that was injected, I think, into the hockey group was Paul Coffey. And that was only on a part-time basis. And in the end, I don't think it worked out very well.
No.
But I don't see a ton of interference. I didn't see any interference from my knowledge from Wayne. Certainly Kevin Lowe has has taken not one step, but maybe three steps back in Edmonton to have a totally different role. Not to say they don't have opinions when asked, but certainly they don't appear to me to inject themselves to change the course of things in Edmonton.
So do you think it's 100% coincidence that the greatest player in the league's history, his brother, works for the organization?
Right. It's total coincidence. Peter Chiarelli bought Keith Gretzky. Brought Keith Gretzky in from Boston when they changed the administration in the Bruins.
And Keith started in Arizona when Wayne was there too, though, right? I mean,
I tell you what, Ryan. This is a red herring. Keith Gretzky is a totally different person than Wayne. They have different philosophies of the game, and Keith, I think, stands on his own for his career and what he's done both in Boston and in Edmonton. And okay. I think coincidence may not be the right word, but certainly parallel. And I think that, by the way, Keith Gretzky returned to the Oilers or came to the Oilers before Keith got brought back to the Oilers. So did Keith bring Wayne in? I don't think that's the reality. I think that Keith stands on his own.
So in that, because, you know, you take a look at Keith Gretzky's drafting record, John, and there's been some solid work done there when he was in Boston. So from what you're hearing, in terms of the new general manager, how much is he in the conversation? How strong a candidate is he? And how many people are we talking about them looking at as filling that potential position?
Right now, I think the list is probably hard and fast between 10 and 12, and Keith's one of the 10 or 12. That's how I read it. That's how I see it at this point for the Oilers. What's happening this week is Nicholson is asking permission, particularly of teams that are out of the playoffs that he thinks people need to be discussed. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he's talked to a few of the people that are still in the playoffs in order to get permission. But from that perspective, I think that one of those 12 is what is Keith Gretzky. He's going to get a full interview and be given a full opportunity to explain his plan.
Last one from me, just where you believe Todd McClellan most likely lands, Los Angeles, Buffalo, or any other tidbits you've got on those two vacancies?
Todd McClellan met with Luke Robitaille yesterday in Vancouver, about the same time that Eric came out with the story that he was leaning towards Buffalo. What I can tell you is that Jason Botterill and Todd did have discussions last week about Team Canada. Whether they had talks about the Sabres or not, I can't tell you. And we also know that, University of Denver's in Buffalo this weekend for the Frozen Four, and Tyson McClellan is on that team. And so Todd will be in Buffalo this weekend. So talking about adding fuel to the fire. I still think, I talked to somebody in the Kings organization this afternoon. They still believe that it's wide open. They still believe they have a chance at getting McClellan. The one thing I can tell you, based on what happened with Mike Babcock in Buffalo and Toronto, is that Buffalo will not be outbid.
Yeah.
The Pegulas will spend more money than anybody else. And if it's money that's the difference maker for Todd, he was making just over $3 million at Edmonton, and if it's money is the issue, he will go to Buffalo. If lifestyle and other issues are factors, maybe it's Los Angeles. I do think it's one of the two. I don't think there's another in there.
John Shannon's with us from Sportsnet. Just one more topic from me, John, and that's on the Florida Panthers and their hiring of Joel Quenneville. And I think it's a great hire, and it's very interesting to see him go there. And maybe the most interesting thing for me is the amount of money that the Panthers are shelling out to bring him in. We're hearing, like, reports suggest $6 million annually for Quenneville. That seems very anti-Panthers in terms of the way they go about their business. I asked you about a philosophical shift in Edmonton. Has there been one in Florida?
Totally. And by the way, I think Joel's probably going to be paid $4.5 million this year by Florida and $1.5 million by Chicago.
Okay.
Because he's still on the last year of his Chicago deal, and then a new $6 million deal kicks in for the Panthers for the additional 4 years of the deal.
Okay.
So from that perspective, and I mean, we've all heard the stories about Bobrovsky and Panarin and, you know, digging deep into the pockets to pay free agents. The question I would ask is Vinny Viola, the owner of the team, has decided to go all in, and Dale Talon has sold him on a plan to go all in. The question is this boom or bust? And is this the last gasp for Viola to suggest that he's going to give it a try? And if he can spend all this money to get a return and people in the seats with a winner, then it was worthwhile. Or if this happens and they go through it and end up not having a winner after spending all this money, what is Viola's future with this team in Sunrise?
Mm-hmm. Or maybe the team with the market. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
What's your thought? Is it ever truly viable long-term there?
Well, I think the answer's across the state. And, you know, what Jeffrey Vinnick did was he went and got Steve Yzerman, stayed out of his way. Yzerman and Julien Brisebois and Al Murray put together a really good team that, with the help of a couple of high picks, including one that was there before them and Steven Stamkos, and they created a winner. And now you can't get a seat to Tampa. And, mm-hmm. Tampa is a bit of an island, is a hockey hotbed in Florida. There's no reason to think that if you put a consistent winner on the ice in that on the other side, that you can't draw. That, to me, is, I think that's a logical conclusion.
Thanks, John. Always great catching up. Great stuff there. Enjoy the draft lottery.
Yeah, hey, and enjoy the Stanley Cup playoffs, boys.
We will. Pump Masters start the same day. It's a Thursday for the books, I'll tell you. Don't miss that. That'll be unreal.
Thanks, John.
Okay.
There is at JSportsNet on Twitter, John Shannon, who you'll see a bunch of over the next few months on obviously Hockey Central at noon and playoff coverage.